William Howard Woods is the son of the man accused in the elevator incident.
Father, he had a restaurant there which was burned down, and he lost everything that he owned at that time, and they put him into stockade, and after they let him out, he moved up to Kansas. But he related many stories about how rough it was and how he felt about the injustices that was placed upon blacks at that time, you know. And so he moved to Coffeeville, Kansas. That's where I was raised up, in Coffeeville, Kansas.
William, what year would this have been?
In 1921, May. I was born May the 18th, 1921, in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
What's going through my mind is that this your story is not mentioned in schools today, and not many young people know this part of our country's history. Could you go tell me in terms of what you tell young people?
Well, I tell people of the injustice that has been placed upon blacks all the time. Now, we were segregated in schools, and when I went to school, my father was telling me about the people that he worked for, you know. He done housework and yard work there, and they resented him sending his kids to school because there wasn't anything for them to do if they went to school. And he said, I don't care. It may not be anything here, but my kids will be prepared so that they can get a job someplace else. So he was very interested in all his kids. I was raised up, and I have one brother and four sisters. So we all went to school, and I went, and we prepared ourselves to get jobs that we wouldn't otherwise been able to get if we hadn't gone to school, you know. And this is a thing I tell kids today, that they do have an opportunity now, you know, to get an education and be sure to educate themselves so that they will be prepared to accept the jobs that are available for them at this time.
Gene, again,
Eddie Fay.
I'm still dealing with,
yes, that's okay.
In terms of this type of your research not being known, mm-hmm. in this, why is that still in our schools and our universities, something like the Tulsa, Oklahoma incident?
Because we are still marginalized people, just like I mentioned in there about the levees not being fixed while somebody else's things were taken care of. Our schools are still underfunded. We still have people locked in ghettos, and I disagreed with Bill Cosby. He was right about parents can do a better job. He was right about we need to clean up the language and our music. But he was wrong to put all the blame on those two. I stayed on CNN's telephone line 2 hours. I got through, first time I ever got through, but they ran out of time before I could tell Bill what I thought. But I did tell him in a book, a book about black women, will be out any day now at the one of our colleges in Tulsa. Okay, and so the reason they don't do it is they just don't care. We are still considered second-class people. We just don't live up to Martin Luther King's thing where he hopes that we will all have justice for all. We haven't reached there. We made great gains, but we haven't reached there yet.
There's a feeling that we should get beyond that we should think about more positive things. And there's that argument. Can you?
It sends me ballistic. I said, what happens in the present is caused by things that happen in the past. What happens in the future will be determined by what we do today. So you have to look at the past. It's part of your record. And you have to build upon that. And that's what Martin tried to do, to tell you, love your neighbors. I can't be happy unless all my neighbors... People talk to me, and I work to get diversity in the schools. I do diversity workshops. They talk to me. I don't understand why you devote all your time to this. I interview these 200 people. I, you know, neglect my family with their permission because they're committed to this. And they said, you have a big, beautiful home on Reservoir Hill, a swimming pool. Why don't you enjoy it? I said, because I can't enjoy as long as one person is being denied his rights. And I fight for them, for their reparation. I fight to get diversity in the schools. They don't want it in because mainly many are ashamed to face it. It makes them liable for some of the things, the ghetto kids. There's a reason they're there. Look at when you have a whole group of one color somewhere. They aren't all that bad. God just didn't make them all evil and bad. But conditions in their lives, political, economic, social, led them to have no faith, as Monica Hall said. It led them to feel no hope. And when you have no hope, you do terrible things. Look at the Middle East, Iraq, people with no hope. And sometimes an apology is necessary. All is necessary. Some of the survivors have told me, I don't need the money. I'm doing okay. I just want them to apologize. I want them, they said, take my money and put it in the schools. They're real concerned with that school issue. And people don't want to change the history. It makes them look bad. France is talking about the colonialism, these people, how they are ungrateful. They wouldn't be ungrateful if you had left them alone, if they had benefited from the wealth. And they talk about handouts. I don't need handouts and he doesn't. We worked. Those people would, too, if they had an opportunity. So colonialism is at the root of it. And the reason they don't want it in the schools, don't like diversity like I teach, they don't want to face that.
For people who are curious about the body of your work, and I'm sort of curious, too, what are the titles of your books?
My first book is called Miss Lucy's Cookies and Other Links in My Black Family Support System. My late husband warned me not to use that title because people would think it was a cookbook. And he's right. One day at Barnes & Noble, I was signing, and a woman wanted to come in, a black couple, and the husband grabbed her and, come on, you ain't using the cookbooks you got. And I went running down the hall, sir, it's not a cookbook, it's an autobiography. But I fought with my husband on that. I had to use that title. Miss Lucy was a little illiterate lady in my hometown of Preston, Oklahoma. Could not write, but she had her granddaughter who was in my class in elementary school, a little two-room school with an outhouse and a pump in the yard. She wrote me a letter when I was a freshman at Tuskegee Institute. I was 17 years old, sharecropper's daughter, dirt poor, didn't have money for toothpaste and deodorant, but I had a wealthy roommate who shared with me. I didn't like the Southern food. The Ku Klux Klan rode through our campus harassing us. I was going to drop out. I had wanted to be a teacher and a writer since age 5. That's when I began. I was ready to drop out. Went to my dormitory. There was a box of homemade cookies made with butter, sprinkles from Miss Lucy. She had her granddaughter write this note. She would be so proud of me when I became a teacher. The world would be so much better off. I wept like a baby, sat on the steps of my dorm. I couldn't let her down. I thought, she's why I'm here today. When I had my first book signing, people were lined up out the door, and Jean was sitting there with the granddaughter. People were in tears when I read that. So I told my husband, I have to use it. So I have to explain, it's not a cookbook. There are a few recipes in it. And the second book, They Came Searching, how blacks sought the promised land in Tulsa. They sought it because my family, I give my two, one from Marlin, Texas, they had beaten one of the black man's son so bad with barbed wire. His back was so lacerated he nearly bled to death. They had a hanging tree. I've been to my folks' hometown with a tree that's in the town center called the hanging tree. My other family was from Sulphur Springs, Texas, my mother. There, my grandfather witnessed the lynching of a best friend. They had done nothing wrong. My grandfather and this friend were riding horses. They came up on a thicket. The Ku Klux Klan were out, said, let's get some niggers today. They lynched my grandfather's friend, and my grandfather hid in thickets and prayed his horse wouldn't make a sound because he would have been lynched too. He saw his friend hanging. When they had stripped him of his clothes, mutilated his body, they left. And thank God that horse didn't make a sound or I wouldn't be here today. And the next day, my grandfather said, we're moving to Oklahoma. I can't stay in Texas another day. I will never set foot here again. He didn't. He never set foot in a church again. It just ruined his life. So that's what I was telling, why they came here, what they were looking for. People like his father trying to find work and be paid like a man. and couldn't get it, so he came on out here. My folks did stay in Oklahoma, and thank God things are better today.
And your other book?
Riot on Greenwood, The Total Destruction of Black Wall Street, The Who, What, Where, When, and How. And that book was used in Congress when we testified before the Black Caucus. I've got a picture of me with... Instead of doing the two-page report that we were supposed to leave with the caucus that was hearing about the riot, I gave all of the major committee members a hard copy of my Riot Greenwood book with a paper clip on the commission report, that chapter. That was my... They were in tears. And so that one is about the riot. The who, what, where, when, why, and why won't they pay these little people? Why are only 93 left? My heart breaks every time we have a funeral, and I have to notify Dr. Ogletree to change the list. It went from 200. The oldest was 100, two little ladies, 106. Fascinating. Had seen everything. Halley's Comet, the first airplane. They were just walking historians. The one who lives the furthest lives in Paris, France, a jazz musician who moved there in the 40s, couldn't live in Oklahoma. That had burned down his folks. The oldest we have living today is 102, and he travels, gets around better than I, drives better than I do, because people say that's not saying much about my driving.
Let me remind people that this is KBOO Portland, Oregon, and we're speaking with Eddie Faye Gates and also William Harold Woods, mm-hmm. a survivor from the Tulsa so-called race riot, so-called. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get back to something and also to make it clear to people who are listening to us what you mean by reparations.
Okay.
To be really clear.
We the commission recommended five things after all that search. Reparations for known living survivors. Reparations for descendants of deceased survivors, economic money to restore the Greenwood area. We recommended scholarships for students who could show a connection to the Greenwood area, and a museum to house the mementos. We got lots of resistance. Although we have a history of reparations for other groups, Native Americans, Japanese Americans, Indians. But when it came to black people, we wanted to hit the teal. And I said, I really went ballistic then. I tell them, I used to be real quiet, sweet, and gentle, but now I'm on the warpath. I told them, I use the, you know, people love five lists, five people you want to meet, eight habits of the heart. I have three, the three Fs, facts, feet, and fire. I do the facts. They sent me to Washington, D.C. I handle documents, Library of Congress, National Archives, Howard University, some of the best archives, Schomburg Center, New York, New York City Library, wonderful place to read. They sent me those. Africa. I even went to Africa. My last chapter in the book is about Africa. And I went to Middle East twice, Warsaw, looked at the Holocaust, compared those. And so we got the facts. And feet, that means you claim to be this spiritual nation. You claim to be this Democrat. I'm going to hold your feet to the fire till you cry uncle. Feet, facts, fire. That's my three Fs. And I spoke to the city council. I have some friends in Tulsa. I really do. Some call me the mother hen for the survivors, pit bulldog, because I will go to bat for them. And the survivors call me adopted daughter. And I love that. Some of the other names I get aren't so... I get the N-word, the B-word, when they're really mad, N-B together. But I've never been threatened, although the Representative Ross, who co-authored the bill, was threatened, and they tried to run him off the highway, so his life was actually threatened. I did have to use law, this commission, to gather this information. Some people didn't want to share with me, and that's a story in itself. I have it in my book, Right on Greenwood. Because it was state mandated, if they had any information any of us on the commission needed, they had to, by law, share it. I had to call Representative Ross. Telephone companies didn't want to share. My University of Tulsa, I had my badge on yesterday, my TU badge. They didn't want to let me look at the National Archives, the Ku Klux Klan records. City Hall didn't want me to look at the Klan records. I know why. I said, well, I'll just have to call Representative Ross before I could get on the phone to him. The phone was ringing. Miss Gates, come on out. Because they had to. They were violating the law. I know why they didn't want me to see the Klan records. The mayor's name was on it. We had to rename streets in Tulsa. They were named after Klansmen. The superintendent of schools, that saddened me, was on it. Some of the students were actually used to help the mobsters get into Greenwood and do those murders. And that breaks my heart. Some of the Boy Scout leaders' names on it. One lawmaker called me to look and check the roll to see if his name was on the Klan list. I did. It was. But he was just in tears. I said, I don't hold that against you. You're not responsible. You're not responsible for the acts and thoughts of others, only you. And he felt so much better. He was a civil rights activist. He just crushed that his grandfather had done that. The lawyers that handled the lawsuits right after the riot, they should have been paid immediately. I checked those records, they routinely paid white claims. Black claims, denied. They were not even allowed to present them. A few, but they paid about 8 or 10. That's why we're fighting for them today, because you should have done it then, just out of the goodness of your heart, the decent thing to do, the spiritual thing to do, the democratic thing to do. And so I give them heck. And many love me. There are a few who don't, and I don't care. There's another one of the members of the commission. There were 11 of us, 6 blacks, 5 whites. 3 were lawyers, so we had a good team. We had 2 lawmakers, and we sometimes, I mentioned in my riot book, we sometimes came to grips and tears, but they, little lady, I love you, I made different, and I knew what they meant. We had had different experiences, we had different views of the same thing, and we worked it through, and I was real proud of how we worked it through and recommended those 5 things.
Thank you very much, Eddie Faye Gates. And thank you very much, Harold. And coming up next is the World Arts Foundation, and be giving its annual Lifetime Achievement Awards. Once again, this is KBOO Portland, Oregon, and we're live from the 21st anniversary. Keep Alive the Dream. It's a tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Actually, there's a switch in the schedule. Coming up next is the No Kidding Choir from Ockley Green Middle School. And Mrs. Janice Flowers Hopkins and Mr. Ken Berry are the directors.
a pretty bit. And the whole day should be spent in moving memories of those who lived in that, for the oneness of our people. So let us all begin. We know love can win. Let us have your own it. Sing as loud as you can.
We're about two-thirds of the way through our program. Give yourselves a big round of applause. Isn't this a great day? Man, I love coming to Jefferson. I'm class of 68 here. It's my school. The Jefferson community is a wonderful place to be from and also to visit. I want to invite people, too, to come out to other activities here.
Okay, I'm Shahid Hamid, and we're at the 21st anniversary to the tribute to Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Keep Alive the Dream, and it's being held here at Jefferson High School. And it's going to be, well, as the announcer just mentioned, we're going to be here for, it's about two-thirds the way through, so there's still time to come up and enjoy some of the entertainment that they're having here. And they have a lot of good entertainment, and still a lot of entertainment that's ready to go. So we're going to have some steppers coming up next. And just to remind you, once again, we are listening to KBOO special program today, 21st anniversary of the tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So with that, we're just about ready for the steppers to come on board. And they will be coming up shortly. And the steppers is kind of a unique dance. It's dance that it's more like a combination between dance and something else. But it developed with a lot of the black sororities in colleges and so forth. And it's something that's held here every year at the Martin Luther King celebration. Again, we're at Jefferson High School, and of course, Jefferson High School is on Kirby Avenue in Northeast Portland. So if you're in the area, you may want to stop by and enjoy some of the things that's going on. We still have State Senator Abel Gortley scheduled to make an appearance. So we're going to Donnie Adair right now. He's the master of ceremonies here at the 21st anniversary tribute to Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
And other families of color to adopt children. So go down and get some information about that. The Fair Housing Council, Portland Center Stage, PGE, Oregon Education Association, Safeco Insurance, Dignity Memorial Providers of Oregon, and McDonald's of Oregon, Portland Association of Teachers, Portland Public Schools, and the African American Chamber of Commerce are all exhibitors today. Let's give them a big round of applause. Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity, like all African-American fraternities and sororities, provide opportunities for young people to grow and achieve academically, socially, morally, in all areas of life. Part of the Kappa's youth activities involve the art of stepping. Stepping promotes discipline, teamwork, precision, and many other positive attributes. It combines the rhythmic beats of African drum sounds made with the feet and the hands, and complex, synchronized body movements, rotations, chants, and singing to create a visual and audio representation of our rich, expressive culture, which means we about to get down. We about to feel the funk right now. Let's get it on. Here they are, the Kappa League Steppers, under the direction of Keith Dempsey. Thank you.
For the Kappa League Steppers, under the direction of Keith Dempsey. We have an announcement to make, so please listen. If you are parked on the south side of the cafeteria near the backstage entrance, you need to move your car. You are blocking other vehicles, and if you do not move your vehicle, it will be towed. And now on with our program. Welcome to the stage the distinguished pastor of Fellowship Missionary Baptist Church, Reverend Dr. Johnny Pack IV.
Good evening. I don't have but a few minutes, but I do want you to know that we as a people have come a long way. We have been in dark for so long, but I want to sing a little song for you. A song that don't nobody sing it but me. And the reason they don't sing it, I don't think they can sing it. I brought this song to Portland, Oregon. And I want our young people to know we are not just here for a stage, but Dr. King, Rosa Parks, and others brought sunshine to our life to let us know that we are somebody. We had some good days and we've had some bad days, but we cannot complain. Janice is going to help me in the key of G. Hello, sunshine. Hello.
sunshine. Come on, help me, y'all. Mighty good to see the bright sunshine. Hello, sunshine. Oh, oh, oh. It's been dark for such a long time. It's been so dark for such a long time. Say it again. Hello, sunshine. It's mighty, mighty good to see the bright sunshine. Such a long time. Listen at this. I can't explain what I've been through. Trying to live my life without you. People say that I act so strange, but let me tell y'all something. God had the power. He made me change. Sunshine. Hello, sunshine. It's been so dark for such a long time. Oh, so dark for such a long time. One more thing. Listen, I know everything gonna be all right.
About that. Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Someone wanted us to know that that's your pastor. Give it. Singing like that, he may be mine next. How are we doing out there today? It's a wonderful time. We're almost in the finish zone here. I want to thank you all for really sticking through and being here. It really makes a difference when we have a wonderful audience who is really partaking and enjoying the talent. Next, I want to bring out a special speaker. I met with him about a week ago, and I said, you know, you have a story to tell. And I really want you to come to our Martin Luther King celebration and share some of the work you've been doing and to share the remarkable work and how it relates to Dr. King. Anand Frey is a resident of Vancouver and a community development consultant. He is a past executive director of the Washington State Commission on Hispanic Affairs, in which he worked on issues of inequalities and education, both issues that Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King stood for. He also represented issues on housing, health, and racial profiling and that's just to name a few. In all my formative years, where as a young Chicano growing up in East Oakland during the turbulent 60s and early 1970s. He wanted you to know that aside from all of that hard work and I'm sure many of meetings, he knows how to have a little bit of fun, and he recently returned from a month-long motorcycle journey to the South, which included the back roads of Alabama and Mississippi. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me introduce Onofre Contades.
I can't sing, I'm sorry. What you end up with is a congested Chicano today. I wanted to tell you a little bit about working together, and I stand here as a proud Chicano out of the Bay Area, where a lot of the work that we've done, a lot of the advances that we did there, was in working together. And one of the examples I wanted to share with you is that when I first got to the Washington State Commission on Hispanic Affairs, one of the first issues we took on was racial profiling. And I remember before going before a Senate committee, but when we did the work, the three executive directors of the African American Committee, the Asian American Committee, and the Latino Hispanic Committee went before the Senate. And what amazed me was in our presentation to the Senate and House committees, that afterwards, state senators, House representatives came up to us and told us, you know, we've never seen these communities work together and bring together a voice and a message. And it's so critical to do that in this day and age. What I also wanted to mention is something that Jonelle mentioned about my trip to Montgomery, or the South, and I went to Montgomery. And it was my personal journey to go down there. Because it's one thing to read in the history books about Rosa Parks not getting out of her seat. It's another thing to be there and to look at the site where she got on the bus. It's another thing to walk up the street and stand in front of the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church. And it's another thing to go to the parsonage where Dr. King lived and to walk up to the parsonage and feel the crater left by the pipe bomb that exploded on their porch one night. And unfortunately, much of that hate still exists. And the work continues. And it's work that we can't do alone in our individual communities. We need to come together. One of the things that is important to me is that in working together, it's a message that emanated even from Dr. King. When I was preparing for this talk, I did a little bit of research, and like every good researcher, got on Google. And I found a quote out of a telegram that was sent in 1966 from Dr. King to Cesar Chavez, when Cesar Chavez was working on the United Farm Workers campaign. And I'm just going to close my words here very quickly with one quick quote. And again, these are the words of Dr. King in 1966. Our separate struggles are really one. A struggle for freedom, for dignity, and for humanity. We are together in spirit and in determination that our dreams for a better tomorrow will be realized. So let us hope we can work together and continue in the battle. Thank you.
The Aurora Chorus has been singing for peace in the Portland metropolitan area for 15 years. The women here today are just a part of the 120-voice women's choir that welcomes all singers of all skill levels. Please put your hands together for the Aurora Chorus.
Again, you're listening to events taking place here at the 21st anniversary, a tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. You're listening, of course, this is KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Shahid Hamid, for this portion of this festivities, and I have with me Reverend Dr. Johnny Pack.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Pack, first of all, wonderful, wonderful song, Sunshine. Mm-hmm. And you wrote that song.
No, I didn't write it. It was written by a preacher named Reverend Jesse Dixon out of Chicago. And I first heard it back in 71.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned it and I sang it when I came out here 21 years ago. They hadn't heard it and I've been singing it ever since. That's my song.
I'm telling you.
Hello, Sunshine.
It was great. Dr. Pack, as we celebrate Dr. King's legacy, what, in your opinion, makes his legacy so enduring when we look and see all of the folks that are paying honor and tribute to him? What makes his legacy so enduring?
To me, it's so enduring because I knew Dr. King. I was 10th grade, 15 years old when he got killed in Memphis, Tennessee. And my mother lived in Memphis, and I was in Helena, Arkansas, about 60 miles south of there, and from Memphis. And I knew him, and I had marched down south and did some of the things in Arkansas and different other places. And then just knowing from where we have come from, the thing that he stood and his legacy, even as a preacher, and by me being a preacher, pastor for 33 years, and I see growth, but at the same token, we seem to forget, especially to mold our young people, to let them know it's just not a day for him. What is the thought of it is why he died and how he died, and the whole thought is what he died for. Mm-hmm. When we look at sit-ins, and I was involved in that, and dogs sicked upon you, and when I was a kid, we'd go to the doctor, and same doctor would treat us, but they had a back door for the blacks and then another door for the whites. I saw all of that. That's why when I got a high school diploma, I left to carry on his legacy, and even through my children and through the church that I pastor. And I'm firm believer in education. I tell the young people, pull your pants up. Dr. King didn't give his life for you to walk around claiming territory as a gang, and you don't even pay taxes, don't even own a home. So his legacy to me is he have molded my life. And here in Portland, Oregon, I try to set the same type of example, especially to our young people. And I remind them every Sunday where we came from. They don't have, we didn't have the opportunity. I didn't have it. My kids got it because I molded away from him like Dr. King molded for me. And so that's the legacy that we got to appreciate, that somebody gave their life, not for just black people, but for all races and all religion of people. That's what I believe.
Mm-hmm. When we see images on the television, like the images we saw during the tragedy of Katrina, and we know that Dr. King, a major portion of his ministry, also dealt with poor people, not just simply seeking racial justice, but economic justice. What were some of the thoughts that went through your mind as you seen, or as you saw those images on television from Katrina, in terms of some of the progress that we've made and some of the progress yet to be made?
Well, one of the main objectives, it hit so hard and so sudden that America came together. That's that diversity that he died for, that we all people, black, white, yellow, red, they all pitched in together to try to give relief to those people. And believe it or not, it's quiet in Portland, but Portland did a lot. I did a lot through my church, you know, to the Red Cross and Salvation Army, and some straight directly to the people, because I have members of my church that their family was in that. And so for America, I think somebody was saying when the tsunami hit over in Asia, and we were sending them so much, but then they said, what would we do if a tsunami hit us? And just a few months later, they got the chance to see America came together for a common cause. And if we can come together, not just when a tsunami or something vital like that happened, but just come together as a people and realize that I just don't understand. When I go to Costco and those big grocery stores and I see all of that food at Safeway and Costco and Winco, how in the world can one store have all that food and then there's some more people sleeping on the bridge and in other countries don't have nothing to eat? And if America can pull themselves together, the Muslim nations and the Baptists, the Christians, all of us, black, white, the sportsmen, all of the rock stars, the rap stars, and get together, we can wipe out world hunger if we do the same thing we did during the tsunami by coming together.
Mm-hmm. One last question. When you look at some of the challenges facing African Americans, you mentioned about a lot about youngsters in terms of the clothes they wear and maybe the lack of awareness in terms of our history and so forth and all of the sacrifices that people like yourself and Dr. King have made. What do you think of some of our challenges and how would you prioritize our challenges for the next 5 or 6 years?
Well, number one, I feel in that when I was coming up, I came up in the James Brown and the Marvin Gaye and Sam Cooke and Temptation era. Our kids come up in their hip-hop. If the hip-hoppers and the rappers that really got that influence on those kids, if they could do the same thing and turn this around for those kids to get on another positive role to let them know that there's nothing masculine about you going around with your pants halfway down. That's nothing. That's not masculine. And then to call you our girls the B word and whores and all, you know. And then the word that a slang that they use, you know what I'm saying. You know, a lot of our kids now, they don't have the diction of proper grammar, the English, you know, everything they saying, you know what I'm saying. Some, you know what I'm saying. And so the churches can do it. I'm doing it. I feel good about what I'm doing. And there ought to be, I know Jeff and others talking about dress codes. I'm for it and I'm against it, but I think that there ought to be something that our young people can look at life more than out there on the streets and wearing big old gold chains and rocking their cars and all that. I think it's time for us to do that. And the Millions Man Mark that Farrakhan started, that's one of the best things. And we need something here because a lot of the kids cannot go to Washington, D.C. But if we had some here in Portland or in our area for our young men and our young women on that same note and have speakers just like we got here tonight, I think we could make a very impact on the Pacific Northwest.
You mentioned the work that you've been doing, and one thing that comes to mind when you think of Dr. King was he brought his ministry out of the church into the street.
Right.
He brought his ministry out to where the people are.
Right.
Do you think, in terms of leadership, do you think that that's happening now? Could we use more of that, or is it just my perception that more needs to be happening in that area?
Number one, sir, we don't really have, in terms of black, of African American, we don't have the strong vocal leaders like we used to have. We need that. And here in Portland, Oregon, I'm a member of the Shriner Mason, 33rd degree Mason, and I bring that up. I'm the illustrious pole table with the Shriner, and I'm a 33rd. And I go to the convention and get all this wisdom to come back. And I look at the fact that we haven't had, in the black churches, we haven't had a minister's union in over 20 years. Now, we have our banner ministry alliance, but we don't have a strict. And so we just organized 3 months ago, over 21 years, haven't had one, and I'm the president. And tomorrow we'll be meeting at 10 o'clock. And this is one of the things I'm going to bring to them. Let us get more involved in the NAACP, me and my ministers as president. Let us get more involved in walking the street. Let's get us some T-shirts with Baptist Ministers Union on it and our jogging suits and let them see us get out of our Cadillacs and our Hemis and walk through the neighborhood unified, not in a boycott, not just a march, just to let them see us out here. And that would give them a positive role model that we're trying to do something for them. And that's what I'm all about, bringing it from the church, from the pulpit, out there where it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Reverend Pack, thank you so much for your comments, and please, above all, keep up the good work.
All right, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. God bless you.
Okay.
Anyone can relate to music. Anyone can relate it to being, you know, a young lady, you know, with music environment. And it's a real good seller for our company. I work for Personal Preference Incorporated, and I have a lot of paintings that deal with history, and we have Rosa Parks and other paintings that other people might be interested in. But
you have a lot of folks in coming in and getting these things.
Oh, definitely. Yes.
And why do you... Why did you start get involved in this particular program?
Well, I've always loved art. I'm not an artist myself, but I've always loved art and admired it. And I started working for this company about 12 years ago, and I go in and I do home art shows, and we have artists from all over the United States that they commission to paint for this company.
And you're not just here, not today, you're doing this, where are you located permanently?
Okay, permanently, I do home art shows, so I take them into different homes, and I sell the art, and they choose their own frames, and the prices are very affordable, and so it's art that you can afford. Some are originals, some are prints, and most of them are Orland Canvas.
Well, I want to thank you for being here today, because it really does beautify what's going on here, so thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me.
One of the other groups that you see here are a number of agencies, groups that people work with to try to change and make a change in the community. And one of those folks who you drive on the streets every day, you see them all the time, you may not know what they're doing, and that's the Oregon Department of Transportation. And Kate, thank you for being
currently we're listening to Mr. Lou Frederick, and he's a community advocate, and he's interviewing the vendors, the many vendors that are here at Jefferson High School. We have Red Cross. We have a lot of vendors participate in this event yearly. Also want to remind you the wonderful chorus that we were listening to during the interview with Reverend Johnny Pack was the Aurora Chorus, headed by Patricia Kornman. So I want you to stay tuned. Again, you're listening to the 21st anniversary tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This is KBOO 90.7 FM. We'll be here till 6 o'clock or thereabouts, so depending upon the length of the program. Also, we have coming up, want you to please stay tuned, because we have some wonderful musicians, Dennis Springer, Jeffrey Manyweather, Linda Hornbuckle, and Janice Scroggins, some of the best musicians in Portland, coming up to pay tribute. So stay tuned. And again, we are listening currently to Lou Frederick here at the 21st anniversary.
We do have a bad history of making an improvement through North Portland back in the 60s when there weren't proper environmental protections in place. We don't do things like that anymore. We don't just fire up the bulldozers and come on in. We are here, and it takes a long time to develop these projects because we take a long time talking to people, looking at what the impacts will be, getting their input, and really studying things thoroughly. So I really would invite people to come talk to me and to get involved in these projects.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for being here.
You're very welcome.
You really need to come down here. The vendors, the people, the food, all of these things are available to you, and if you get a chance, you should come down. But more importantly, this is showing the range of things that are available in our community, the range of people who are interested in our community. This is the kind of thing that we have been trying to work up for years. It is being successful because our community and the whole community, as it relates to a day that we're celebrating, Martin Luther King.
I'm back. How you doing? Are you enjoying the program? There's a lot going on, isn't there? Out there stamping your feet and shouting, and I love it. Oh, what was that? One more time. I just wanna say one thing, and it's gonna be brief. Everybody's been talking about class of 68 and class of 67. Sharon Mitchell, demo, Jefferson High School, class of 1974. All right. Dennis Springer, currently of Atlanta, Georgia, is an accomplished saxophonist. He started out in Portland with the legendary recording group Pleasure. He has played in virtually every corner of the United States with some of the great jazz and contemporary musicians of our time, such as Grover Washington Jr. and Woody Shaw. Always striving to lift your spirit, Dennis brings his soulful and pure sound to his audience, combining jazz with spiritual overtones. Jeff Miniweather also has roots in Portland's Youth Sound program many years ago. He joining us today after spending the last 5 years playing drums on the island of St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands. Joining them for this very special musical tribute are Linda Hornbuckle and Janice Scroggins, a vocalist and keyboardist who need no introduction because they have been labeled time and again as the best in the Northwest. Let's celebrate with Dennis Springer and friends.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Now I know what Dorothy meant when she said there's no place like home. There really is no place like home. It's good to be back just for a minute. And it's a very important occasion, very special day. We've got to keep the civil rights movement going. That's what the pastor of my church said. We've got to keep it. We kept it going all this time, but we need to keep it going. And the reason why it's kept going so long is because it's been peaceful. All right? So that's all I have to say. I'm going to bring on the vocalist today. It's a lady that I worked with for off and on for a number of years. Extreme talent here. Let's give a hand for Miss Linda Hornbuckle.
Let's welcome Dennis back with a round of applause, please. If you ever change your mind, baby, darling, leave it behind. All you got to do is bring it back home. Bring me some love.
We have with us Lee Fleming, African American Chamber of Commerce. He will be a recipient of the African American Chamber of Commerce Award here at the Martin Luther King Tribute 21st Anniversary. Lee, tell us a little bit about yourself. What school do you go to?
I go here at Jefferson High School. I'm 17 years old, senior, also a student representative on the core team. A Black Student Union president and the historian for Student Council.
Okay, you're also one of the steppers, right?
Right, I'm with the Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Junior League. We're called the Kappa League.
Great. What are some of the things you plan to do when you go? Or which college are you looking at? Are you looking at college right now?
I'm kind of interested in Oregon State University. That is where my step teacher actually graduated from, so I thought I'd follow in his footsteps.
Okay, who's your step teacher?
Mr. Keith Dempsey.
Keith Dempsey, okay.
Yes.
What got you interested in stepping?
Actually, it was through the SEI Self-Enhancement Program about, let's say, 8 years ago when I was about 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got pretty interested in the program, mainly because of the discipline, the unity of the brothers, and the relationship I had with Mr. Dempsey.
Okay, great. And you plan on continuing stepping, or is this going to be your last year?
Well, with the Kappa League, we're not going to be stepping as a group, no longer, but I plan on going to Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity and becoming a new.
Great. We want to wish you all of the best. Lee Fleming, recipient of the African American Chamber of Commerce Award here at his MLK Scholarship.
Well, he'll be receiving that live on stage in just a few minutes, right?
Yes, sir.
Watching on cable.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Right. So if you're watching on cable. Okay, now we're going back to Linda Hornbuckle.
Thank you.
And the band live here at Jefferson High.
You ain't got no part of drive. You ain't got nothing in your pocket.